So we have the same problem now where there's a lot of bad coverage coming out of the capital, such as Washington, although from the ground itself, reporting is quite excellent.
We want to thank you so much for being with us. Peter Maas, journalist, former senior editor for The Intercept, author of Love Thy Neighbor, A Story of War. We'll link to your latest piece in The Washington Post. He also covered U.S. invasions of Afghanistan and Iraq for The New York Times. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you. Joined tonight by Kyle.
Yeah, I'm here.
Well, okay, so when we left you last, we were in Florida, which is not where the eclipse was happening. Well, I mean, it was happening there, just not full. We found out it was in Texas. So we did a mad dash. Well, not really a mad dash, just a long drive to Texas from Florida, and wound up in the Austin area where something known as Totality was supposed to take place. And yeah, you know, for a year now, people have been talking about this, actually more than a year as well. I'm going to keep contradicting myself, aren't I? So people have been planning this for a long time, booking hotel rooms well in advance. And the one thing they couldn't plan on was the weather. Now, it's Texas, you know. Texas is supposed to be clear. It's supposed to have nice, blue, dry skies. But it turns out that's not always the way things work out. And as you probably have heard by now, overcast skies, clouds, even severe weather have cursed the band of Totality in the Texas area for the most part. We basically thought we'd see it around Austin, maybe up towards Waco, Dallas, that area. We were even planning on going to a place named, am I correct, Kyle, Ding Dong?
Yes, we thought Ding Dong might be a good place to go.
Yeah, well, the reason we thought that is because we saw it on a map. There really is a place called Ding Dong in Texas. And it seemed like maybe... Well, I mean, we were just pretty much guessing at that point. Where could we go? Anyway, today is the day of the eclipse. It's about 1 hour before the eclipse right now. And what we decided to do was simply get in the car and drive. And based on some scarce weather data and what some people in the media were saying, we went west to a place called... I forgot the name of the place. Where are we, Kyle?
Fredericksburg.
Fredericksburg, of course. I almost said Williamsburg. So we went to Fredericksburg in Texas. And dare I say, the sky is mostly overcast, but the sun is out. Now, there's still an hour to go. There's an awful lot of people here. A lot of people came out to Fredericksburg. Along the way, it was about a two-hour drive from Austin. You see all these people having their own events of one sort or another, camped out or basically just hanging out in the field. But everybody in Texas seems to really be looking forward to this, whether it's rain or shine. And even if it is overcast, you know, obviously we hope it's not, but if it is, it's still going to get really dark and it'd be really cool. And there's also this sense of community, which is a very unique thing for an event like this. So that's where we are right now. We'll see what happens. Fingers crossed. Okay, we have about 18 minutes to go before Totality. It's gotten significantly more overcast, but you can occasionally hear cheers as the sun emerges. And that's usually followed by groans when the sun disappears again behind a cloud. So the hope is for the 4 minutes that Totality is in effect, we'll at least catch a glimpse of it. But even if we don't, I think this is a fun experience for the, I don't know, is it 1,000 people on this in this park in Fredericksburg?
Oh, there you are.
You're supposed to wear the glasses when staring at the sun, Kyle.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's the taking them on and putting them off, taking them off, putting them on, that back and forth. Sometimes you slip because the cloud's moving. Uh-huh. So if you don't gauge it right, you get a little bit of a flash because you take the filtered eclipse glasses off and you realize, wow, it's really bright even though there's a little bit of cloud cover. It's deceiving. So it's best when the cloud starts to cover to avert your gaze, then take them off and, I guess, put on sunglasses or whatever you are.
Why wait till I hear the cheering and then I put my glasses on? Because that tells me people have already risked their eyesight to tell me that the sun is out. But, well, this will all be over pretty soon. Actually, it's not going to be over immediately because This has been going on for a couple of hours now, where the moon is getting increasingly covering the sun, and of course it's going to go in the other direction. So it'll be a couple of hours after totality before the eclipse is completely over. But the main event, which is totality, which is why we're all here, that's only about 4 minutes long. Fingers crossed. But of course, you know, we saw an eclipse in 2017 in Tennessee, and we were lucky enough to be able to see the sun during totality, just missed a cloud. This is nothing like that because it's mostly overcast here, and there it was just partly cloudy. But I think, you know, most people just have enjoyed the adventure of being a part of this. But boy, it would be good if we could see it too. You know, I'm glad there isn't like a master of ceremony here that's like playing music and counting down and saying all kinds of stupid things. It's pretty much everybody just hanging out and having their own conversations. I hear Bill Nye, the science guy, is here somewhere, but I don't see him.
Yeah, I think that's part of maybe a ticketed or private event. This seems to be more of like a public event in the middle of town. We're in basically what is a large park and central area with, you know, public restrooms, everything you might expect. Of course, there's a lot of concessions here, some food truck drinks and other things, refreshments. There's facilities for people. You know, obviously they prepared, but wherever he is, it's probably a bow tie required type event, you know, like real big ticket kind of thing. You know, you got to know somebody to get in, that whole thing. He doesn't do things that are like, you know, just, you know, pedestrian like this. But being who we are here, and this is enough for us.
It is enough because, boy, we've been traveling for days just to be here. Well, we didn't know we were going to be here. We thought Austin would be the place to be. And you know what? It may very well turn out to be the place to be. We don't know what the weather is like over there, but it looked really bad, and all the forecasts seemed to imply that it was not only going to be cloudy, but it might be severe storms. So that's not ideal weather for a solar eclipse. Here, out west, a couple of hours, maybe. And, it was a little sunny less than half an hour ago, so the hope is that these clouds will disappear or just at least break a little bit. We'll know in less than 15 minutes. Not only is it cloudy, I feel like I'm getting some sprinkles of rain.
I haven't had that sensation, but I trust your judgment.
Yeah, it could just be an air conditioner, I don't know, but how close is it to total?
I would say like 85, 90. It's just a little crescent left to cover.
Well, now it's totally covered by a cloud. Well, just under 9 minutes to go, it does feel like twilight right now. Kind of evening. Should be upon us, but no, it's the middle of the day. And the sun has emerged again. It's literally out for about 5 seconds. Not enough time to put my glasses on. Okay, with about 5 minutes left, saw a little sliver of the sun while watching it through glasses. I think we might get a moment, at least, of totality here. We'll see. It really is getting dark.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say dark, just kind of impending dark. Okay, 3 minutes and change. When it gets down to zero, we don't need to use our glasses. We can just stare at the sky and wait for the sun to come out. Or what's left of the sun. Go to Texas, they said. The sky is always clear there. Stay away from New England. And today the sky is clear in Maine, of all places. And Canada. Only a tiny bit of the sun left. 2 minutes, 30 seconds. A lot of fingers crossed here. Two minutes. 90 seconds. One minute to go. And the sun is behind a pretty thick cloud, but not a very big cloud. There's a chance. It's definitely getting very dim here. Okay, 30 seconds to go and the sun is emerging just a little bit.
Still too bright to look at.
15. Boy, this is a photo finish. 10 seconds. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And I still see the sun. Maybe this counter isn't accurate.
There's probably delay with the internet.
And that's just when it went behind a cloud. Okay, we are in totality, but we are also behind a cloud. It is really dark now. Well, I see something. I mean, look how dark it is around us. My God. It's like, oh, there it is. There it is. Just a tiny bright. Oh, that's the disc.
Yeah.
There it is.
Woo. Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's beautiful. That's beautiful. It disappeared behind a cloud. But my God, we saw it, though. We did see it.
Yeah, that was it. That was really amazing. Just a little bit of a color on one side and the entire halo of the corona.
Can you believe how dark it is? I don't remember being this dark in Tennessee.
It's really dark. I think the cloud cover is part of that.
I don't think anybody's complaining, even if it was only a few seconds. There it is again. It's coming out again. Oh. It's like a ship gliding by. It's the clouds that are moving, but that's what it looks like. Just this black disc just behind the clouds, emerging for a second and then vanishing. And is that a star up there? Yeah, that's a star.
Yeah.
That might be Jupiter. This is so much darker than Tennessee was. So much darker. It feels like nighttime. Someone should keep track of when totality ends so that we don't blind ourselves.
Yeah. I'm 2 minutes fast. So.
Well, that doesn't help. I think it's coming out again. Here we go. No less than four appearances. Brief appearances, but so much more exciting because they were brief. I don't think I'm going to look up anymore, though. I think totality is probably over. I'll check my phone to make sure.
I looked with the glasses. It's not quite there yet.
It seems to be getting a little lighter, though.
Yeah,
I'm going to say it's over. I think that's probably safe. That was intense.
Yeah, definitely spectacular. And even with the cloud cover, it was pretty amazing. And it is substantially brighter just in the last sentence I've said.
Look at that. It's like the sun rising in hyperspace or something. It's accelerated. I do not look directly at the sun now. Sun is emerging again for the first time since totality. Okay, I see a sliver of light. Well, that's cool. But we're in Texas now, and we gotta get back. Well, I have to say, that was certainly fun. It was a blast. It was worth it. What do you think, Kyle?
Yeah, we did our best, and I think being able to move around and playing it by ear really helped us get what glimpse we did get.
Yeah, having a car that we just hop in and drive somewhere. You know, originally, we were going to stay in Austin, and... yeah, the sky just didn't look very promising there, and we just heard about this Fredericksburg place, and we just hightailed it on down there, and while it wasn't a clear sky, it was mostly cloudy. In fact, it got cloudier as the time got closer, but there were so many people there. It was such a good feeling, and when the time came, we did see it. We saw it four different times. It emerged only for a few seconds each time, but hearing the cheering of the crowd was really awesome. And I don't know, the whole event just seemed very communal. On the whole way out there, we kept passing little towns where people were gathering for the eclipse and setting up all kinds of seating arrangements and things like that. So everybody was getting into it. And yeah, it wasn't perfect, but it was pretty good. And boy, did it get dark.
Yeah, well, that was incredible. A lot of the vendors had their nighttime lights on while that period was going past. and it looked like a night scene at a fair or a festival. But the mood was really, really joyous. People were excited to be there and out amongst one another, taking in this celestial phenomena together. And just the cheers or the gasps reacting were the best way to know when to look and not, if clouds were moving. And that alone just really helped drive home that communal experience where we were all just a part of this one thing, focusing on it and taking in the experience.
Yeah, I was worried that we would be taken advantage of some way. I guess it's the New York in me, the cynicism, assuming that people are just going to try to rip you off. And I think in some places they did. But where we went, we were able to park on the street, no problem. I mean, we had to go quite a ways to park, but everybody else was doing the same thing. Nobody tried to charge us for anything. There were no scams going on. It was just one big communal event that when it was over, it was over. Actually, when it was over, it wasn't completely over because the eclipse went on for another couple of hours, so a lot of people stayed around, and we were able to mosey on out of there. Now, on that note, well, first of all, I should point out, you might hear the sound of a fountain. We're back in Florida now, and we didn't record on the drive back, and there's a reason for that, because almost as soon as the eclipse ended, the weather began. I don't know what it was exactly, and I don't think it's connected to the eclipse, all the conspiracy theorists that settle down. We drove from Fredericksburg over towards Dallas. You wanted to see a statue, the famous AT&T statue. Let's describe that first.
Yes, this is the, let's say, mythical god or the mythical symbol of what is the former Bell system. And that is called the Spirit of Communication, which was a sort of icon, a visual representation of the spirit of service, of their goal, their aspirations. It is a way of describing the power and spread of communication. Just all of that wrapped into this statue. It's basically a man holding what is a coil of trunk cables in one hand, and has another arm up with thunderbolts representing electrical connection, electrical activity, harnessing that activity. It also is a winged character, so there are very large feathered wings that are on the back of the statue.
And the statue used to be in New York.
That's correct. This statue was at the top of what was the headquarters of AT&T or the Bell system for many, many years, basically throughout their dominance.
But you mean it was on top of the building?
Yes. This was an adornment that was the pinnacle of their headquarters. And eventually, when their headquarters was moved out of that building, I think prior to, but let's say around the time of the breakup of that system, it had been relocated to the Texas headquarters, which is in Dallas. But for the period up until about a couple years ago, it had been located inside in a water feature, probably something like the one all around Florida, but in the lobby area. And that itself made it off limits. It was no longer visible but to the public, but rather visible only to people at the headquarters. So that's the genesis of it. And it is now in a public area in Dallas where you can walk up on the street and view it.
So we just drove on in to Dallas, got out of the car, took a whole bunch of pictures, and it was really thrilling to see it. And it was worth the drive. But let me tell you about that drive. Almost as soon as we started driving away from Fredericksburg and towards Dallas, we noticed that the sky was growing dark for a different reason, and that was because of storm clouds moving in. Actually, it was closer to Dallas when we noticed this. I saw lightning, and that's always of concern in that part of the country. I asked you to turn on the radio. Now, a couple of things here. You turn on the radio, and if it's AM, you can hear lightning. You hear the static that lightning causes. So that tells you if there are storms in the area. But more importantly, if you know the radio stations, the local radio stations, you can tune into them and find out just what's going on. I happen to know of WBAP, which is a station in Dallas, an AM station. I used to listen to that station when I was a kid in New York, and I was what they call DXing on the AM band. At night, you can hear distant stations, and it's great fun to hear stations from faraway places. And Dallas was pretty far away from New York, so I was aware of that station, still around, still exists. We turned it on, and sure enough, they're talking about storms. They're talking about severe thunderstorms. They're talking about flash flooding. They're talking about tornadoes. And they're also activating the EAS system. I got to tell you, man, we must have heard the EAS system activated a dozen times that night alone. And it was fascinating the way they were doing it. They were saying, okay, we're going to send this message down to our other stations on the network. And they basically were talking to other radio stations over the air and saying, please pass this along to your listeners. This is a very dangerous situation. And it was. There were times there where it felt like we were underwater as we were driving on the interstate into Dallas. And it was quite a welcoming that we got to that city. It was scary, right?
Absolutely. I just remember the clouds being on one side, and you said, you know, watch those, and then they ultimately were surrounding and enveloping us. We saw lightning strikes, and that alone was sort of a foreshadowing for what we became just enveloped in all around amidst really big sheets of water. And I think we got kind of used to the lightning at that point.
Yeah, you never really get used to the thunder, though. In fact, we stayed at a place near Dallas, and as we were going to sleep, there was a thunderstorm that had caught up to us. And I was telling you, you know, Kyle, this thunderstorm sounds like it's over, but usually, at least back home, when that happens, when the thunder moves away, there is always one big final clap that you're not expecting. And before I could finish that sentence, that's exactly what happened. It sounded like an explosion. It sounded like we were being bombed. It was unbelievable, but what an experience, all on the same day of the eclipse. The next day, though, we made our way to Shreveport, Louisiana, a city neither one of us have been to, just as a way of getting further south to New Orleans. Stopped for lunch in Shreveport. As we were getting there, it seems that storms were hitting that city. I don't know if they were the same storms or different storms, but the EAS was going off again on other radio stations. Pouring rain, lots of thunder, lots of lightning. You found this a place to have lunch that was right on the water, so we could actually witness lightning strikes. We saw that a bridge had been closed and cars were stopped in the middle of it. It was so dramatic, and it just seemed like no matter where we went, we were bringing the weather with us. We made our way down to New Orleans, one of our favorite places in the world, and basically crashed there, hung out. Well, before we crashed, we hung out on the porch, because you get a porch in your hotel there, and just hung out on this great enclosed porch next to a trolley that ran all night, and got ourselves a bottle of wine from a bar down the road. Which, you know, we ask, is it okay if we carry a bottle of wine, if we buy a bottle of wine here and carry it? Is it okay if we sit outside on this porch? Everything we asked, people were like, of course it's okay. You can do whatever you want. You know, you could walk down the road drinking a glass of beer if you want. It's not a big deal. That's what I love about New Orleans. So we sat out there for a while just talking about various things for a couple hours, I think.
Yeah, what I loved about that is it was such a tumultuous and eventful moment with weather and flooding and that kind of stuff. But the funny part was, it was so comfortable, and it felt just really relaxing after having driven through so much to be in a place with such character that we're familiar with and that just basically kept going. I mean, you think of the adversity that people from the area, given the storms in 2005 and many storms since, they don't really bat an eyelash. And especially as a tourist, you can't really clutch your pearls and be that afraid, because people there have endured so much more in the past. So we kind of took it in stride, as the locals would, and just took care of ourselves. And
yeah, it was such a calm, calm effect there, because we had finally arrived in New Orleans. Storms were behind us. Everything was just beautiful.
Yeah, even in the parking lot, I remember remarking to you, I think it was a lilac or some kind of bush with a white flower, and it was so pungent, just the aroma when we'd gotten out of basically being on the highway a lot. It just struck me. It was amazing, just the fragrance of it. And it hit me as we were unpacking, and it was kind of a metaphor for how relaxing and beautiful that was to be back in New Orleans and see the trolley and just relax a little bit outside.
And we relaxed. We went to sleep, woke up the next day, and realized that another storm had come, or the same storm was still following us. I don't know. But we woke to all kinds of dire warnings of flash flooding, life-threatening flash flooding that was taking place, heavy rain. And we were basically commanded not to leave by the TV, not by the hotel people. They didn't seem to care. But we basically went downstairs, and they had the TV going. And again, you know, knowing the stations, WWL is the radio station to listen to. It was also the TV station to watch. We were just riveted to that, trying to figure out exactly what we should do next, because we were kind of stranded at that point. We had checked out of our room, but we weren't really, wasn't really safe to leave. Eventually, though, after an hour, maybe an hour and a half, things cleared up enough where it seemed to be safe to get out. But once we started driving through the streets, and I was heading for the French Quarter, because I wanted my pralines. I wanted to get something from New Orleans, a lot more, actually. We realized, wow, there is a lot of flooding here. There were some streets that were completely flooded. Some were closed. And we just had to be very, very careful. And while we were doing that, we were listening to WWL, and you know, they were giving all kinds of advisories. And this one guy on the radio in particular saying, you know what, if you're out there driving now, I have no sympathy for you. If you total your car, if you drown, you did it yourself. So it was like he was talking directly to us. And I was you know, talking back to the radio, saying, look, this wasn't our idea. We have no place else to stay. We have to go someplace. And, you know, I really want those pralines. And I felt, you know, like I was being yelled at. But he's right, you know, you got to stay indoors in situations like this, if you can. Eventually, we made it to where we were trying to get to, took our time, we were very safe, and, you know, despite the weather, we had an enjoyable time in New Orleans. Anything you recall about the French district that we walked around in a little bit?
Well, it was a lot like our previous trip there, in that people were worrying about flooding. A lot of the entrances to places were not quite sandbagged yet, but it was a big deal, because a lot of what they were talking about on the radio was a particular pump in the pumping station system that weren't operational. All of those details are critical, because in some of the low-lying areas, particularly underpasses were mentioned as places where water gathers, and estimations as to when the pumps will catch up, all of that stuff was going on. But I liked being back in that area. It was quiet. There was a lot of people milling around. Let's say people that are experiencing homelessness and others that were basically just trying to stay dry.
Yeah, definitely.
But it was very, very slow and just not full of tourists, particularly because of the situation with the weather.
I mean, I guess we were tourists, but we weren't acting like tourists. We were able to park our car on the side street, you know, not get ripped off for parking or anything like that. It's just basically, you know, very laid back. And we just made our way down the street, observing where the puddles were, I stopped in some local shops and waited until things were safer to drive away and continue our journey.
It was lovely just getting into, again, a familiar place, a place that we had walked around before, but without a lot of the foot traffic, and really we weren't as worried about things like parking violations. I don't think anyone's ticketing at that hour and under those conditions.
If they were, they deserve it. They deserve whatever they're asking for. But, you know, I mentioned the hotel we stayed at. It was really this, it wasn't the one I thought it was going to be, which was right on a trolley line, or streetcar line, as they call it. But it was similar. And there were a lot of places like that. We tend to stay in cheap places, and this was very cheap. It was very grandiose and nice and relaxed. And sometimes we find some really interesting places that way. Sometimes, though, we have adventures. I remember on the way out, as we were driving from Florida to Texas to see the eclipse, sometimes we don't know exactly where we're going to stay until moments before we stay there. You were, I believe, on the phone making reservations. Okay, so we were driving Florida. We wanted to at least get into Louisiana. So Florida is big. Wow, Florida just takes forever. So we finally got out of Florida, and then we're in Alabama, but that doesn't last long. Then we're in Mississippi. That lasts a little longer, but once we're out of Mississippi, that's the time to crash for the night. Sleep, that is, not really crash. We were looking for the first place we could find there, and we picked a place called Slidell, I believe is the name of the town.
Yes, it was right across the border.
And so we booked this this hotel there, our navigational system got us there. And we walked in the door. There was somebody just waiting for the front desk receptionist. She said she'd been waiting there 20 minutes, and they just weren't there. And it's like they were taken away. It's like they just walked away. You saw a sweater on a chair. You saw, I think, half-eaten snack. You saw the computer was still logged in. We started calling the corporate headquarters. We heard the local phone ringing. We were just trying to get somebody to check us in. This went on for a good 30 minutes, 40 minutes. And eventually, I reached the corporate headquarters. Everyone was trying to reach at the corporate headquarters. And I reached a guy who mistakenly thought I was a member of their elitist club, which I wasn't, but he didn't find that out till after he had helped me. And he made arrangements for us to stay at a property down the road that was owned by the same company. So we did that, managed to get some sleep that night. And then when we got to Austin, there was another adventure where we got there a night early, so we actually had two nights at that place. But they couldn't find our name. Well, actually, they could find our name, but they were telling us that they hadn't gotten paid by, what is it, booking.com or hotels.com or whatever it is, one of those services. And I'm like, you know, this isn't my problem. You got to work this out with them. But we had to get confirmation numbers and PIN codes, and the whole thing just dragged out forever. The guy was very nice. He was trying to help us, but I didn't understand what the problem was. We booked, we paid, we were already charged for it. So, you know, we just wanted to get into our rooms because we were tired. So there tends to be drama sometimes if you're booking things through third parties or at the last minute. But I guess it's worth it in the end. But anyway, after we left New Orleans, we found out that a tornado had hit in the town of Slidell, where that first hotel was, where nobody showed up. So that was kind of miraculous, wasn't it? That we picked a town to stay in that neither of us had ever heard of before, had a little adventure in that town, and then that town got hit by a tornado.
Uncanny. I can't even begin to theorize what was going on with that kind of coincidence, but it was not anything we did, and it did not involve voodoo dolls or anything like that. So,
no, because we stayed in a fairly nice place in Slidell, and we drove past the tornado damage. In fact, we had to get fuel, and I realized as we were leaving the interstate and pulling into Slidell, it was kind of dumb for us to wait until we got to Slidell to get fuel because, maybe they don't have any power, and gas pumps kind of need that. But it turns out half the town did have power, but three quarters of the town were at the gas station trying to fill up their cars and tanks and whatever else they could use to fuel their generators. But everybody was so civil. Everybody was really, really nice. And we waited our turn, and it took about 25 minutes, but we got fuel and were able to move on and keep going back into Florida. And we made it to Tallahassee right when yet another thunderstorm was on our tail. And boy, that one was really loud too. We were inside our room trying to go to sleep, and just, you know, these biblical bangs and flashes. And keep in mind, you know, ever since the eclipse at this point, we had been dealing with storms all the way back to Florida. And it was an adventure. It was something. And, you know, I was doing all the driving. So every night I was a zombie. You know, I was still driving when I was closing my eyes. Happy to say we made it to Tallahassee. And after that, things cleared up as we made our way back to our starting point in Florida, where we're going to get back onto the auto train to head back home.
Yeah, that was so incredible. Going to sleep that night, we tried to log on and stuff like that, but the hotel itself had a couple of moments where the power went out and then came back on. So we kind of gave up and went to bed so that we could wake up and do that.
Yeah, I had a laptop whose battery conked out midway through the trip. I basically got a message saying, this battery has expired due to normal wear and tear or whatever. You need to get a new battery or plug into the wall. And, you know, fine, I'm plugging into the wall now, but that doesn't work when we get a power failure. I lose everything that's open. That wasn't working out. The TV went out because it was satellite and it was a sheet of water coming down. And the internet went out at some point too. You know, another adventure, but hey, we live for the adventures, and that's what this has been all about. I don't think I ever mentioned that we're sitting in front of a fountain. I said we're back in Florida, but yeah, we're sitting in front of a fountain because they have fountains everywhere, and it's a good thing too because it's pretty hot, and that definitely is refreshing to sit by water. But I just want to end with a couple of thoughts about what we were going through. Listening to the radio, of course, is a godsend. Finding decent stations out there, I gotta say though, the amount of hate radio out there is concerning. I'm talking about what you hear on AM radio, basically just a lot of talk stations that spread utter lies. I mean, I'm not gonna get into the specifics, but it's your right versus left thing. But to hear stories told as fact when there are lots and lots of nuances to them, you know, at least I like to think when we tell a story, we have a lot of asides and say, well, okay, but this also was a factor in these events, not simply the other side are fire-breathing demons and we must do everything possible to defeat them. It's I mean, I know there are some people, see, I'm doing it now, I know there are some people on our side that are like that, but relatively few. I mean, compared to what you hear on the AM radio, it virtually covers the entire spectrum. It's either religion, right-wing hate radio, or sports. There's really nothing else. Now, you get to FM, okay. If you find an NPR station, at least you might hear something that's fairly educational or interesting to listen to. But this is something I was concerned about many years ago when I saw it starting to happen. Religious stations taking up valuable non-commercial frequencies because they're tax-free, even though they're spouting the same rhetoric that the right-wing hate radio on AM is spouting. Literally the same words, sometimes the same people. That is a real disservice, because for every religious station that is on there, there are times here in Florida and throughout Texas where maybe 9 stations in a row are religious. And I'm not talking religious like, here's a Buddhist station, here's a Muslim station. No, they're all Christian stations. This is like living in a fundamentalist land, and they're all basically shouting and screaming and demanding money from you. You can't find an independent station where they're playing music or a bunch of kids are doing radio like they do here at WUSB. It's sad. It's sad to think those voices are being silenced in favor of what I consider to be commercial enterprises, because they are basically selling a product and getting money from you. They're not airing commercials, even though what they're saying pretty much sounds like one big commercial all the time. So that's really disheartening. It's really disheartening to hear what radio has become in many parts of the country. And I just hope we're able to get it back at some point, because, wow, it's hard. It's hard to drive through hundreds of miles where there's nothing on the radio to listen to that's not going to upset you.
Yeah, it does a disservice to most of the public that would be growing up or living in that area, insofar as it's limiting the breadth of ideas, the market of ideas, the kinds of divergent and even at times contradictory opinions that people need to hear to form their own. Without that, you have this sort of monoculture, and to call it public airwaves, it doesn't feel public, because it's really serving a narrow interest group. And I can only imagine and wonder what it is like to grow up with that and then go elsewhere to hear places like this station and other freeform and non-religious or non-specialty formats that allow so much to choose from that you could pick and choose, listen to or not. With this kind of program, one program after another, basically towing the same line, it feels like a form of widespread propaganda and dare I say even brainwashing. And what you pointed out, I mean, the one religion that is represented is itself a big clue as to how far from the actual representation of the public those channels have become, and what it does to the possibilities for new programming. And we were in the Bible Belt. I understand that. But that, to me, means you have churches, you have a way of life that it is traditional and in a sort of respected way, but not in a way that permeates into other domains as the norm. And I find that un-American.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I have to say, I have no problem with religion. I have no problem with churches. I'm comfortable in small towns. We had nothing but good interactions with people. And that's, I think, the distinction here, is that people are not the problem. We went to some big cities, we went to some small towns, we went to Austin, we went to Dallas, we went to a post office where there was just one woman running the place, and we had a nice chat with her in the middle of nowhere, no offense, but people are just so interesting to talk to, and they're open, and they're not hateful, they're not racist, not by default. However, they're being fed a steady doctrine of exactly that. And I think that's where you have to point the finger at entities like Fox, who identify themselves everywhere, by the way. Local stations call themselves Fox. Local TV stations call themselves Fox. And nobody else is doing that. So it's that constant Fox injection of hate and categorizing other people in a particular way. That sticks with people who believe that is the truth. They may not be like that themselves, but getting that steady diet of misinformation and hatred, that's what they're going to believe before they believe anything else. We have to work to counter that.
Well, and in addition, that kind of conformity, it primes people to ingest other ideas without questioning them. When you do not have divergent and diverse opinions, different types of programming, and you're establishing a certain ideology and a certain specific, in this case, religion, as the norm, you create any other belief system as an other or an antithesis to what you're conditioning people, your listeners, your audience, what you're conditioning them to understand as normal society or mainstream or, you know, what our community is, even though if you asked every single person in that community, there would be outliers. There would be people who do not necessarily conform to that particular ideology. And it is harmful, I think, ultimately, to even believers, the faithful, because they then go out into the world acting and thinking in ways that are not open to others' ideas and others' ways of lives. And I think that that can be quite crippling in some cases for people that do not stay in communities like this.
Yeah, they cheat themselves as well, and it's sad. We can do better. All of us can do better. This was a real eye-opener. We'll talk more about this in the weeks ahead, but we're out of time now. We've got to move on. So from Florida, next to the nice refreshing fountain, on our way to the auto train heading back, we will talk to you again next week. Good night, everyone.
See ya.
And a WUSB transmitter.
Oh no! I live there! My dog Scruffles! All my stuff to humanity!
He seems to be drawn by the groovy music emanating from the WUSB signal.
He's reaching for the tower! Someone save Bob Longman!
Oh no, there goes the tower.
How do we ever hear WUSB ever again?
Here's how. WUSB is now in Spring Radiothon, and we need your help to protect us from Godzilla attacks on our transmitter. Even as we speak, our engineer Frank is constructing a Mechagodzilla robot to fight off this threat to our airwaves.
But we can't do this without your help.
Please call 631-632-6901 to make a pledge in any amount.
Or go to www.wusb.fm. Help me!
And click on the pledge link.
Remember, Godzilla could return at any time. Please donate today.
Oh my god! Godzilla!
Oh my god!
Godzilla!
I'll save James Agana!
He's not doing
it.
God, I don't want to relax!